Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. The Mill Valley Film Festival kicks off this week with more than 200 filmmakers representing over 50 countries. And making its debut in the festival is the film Finding the Gold Within. It's from local filmmaker and today's guest, Karina Epperlein. The film focuses on the story of six young black men from Akron, Ohio, making the transition from high school to college as they participate in Alchemy, Inc. It's a mentoring program that teaches them confidence and self-respect through mythology, drumming, and writing. These young men face racism, stereotypes, and other challenges on their journey, but they navigate these struggles with support from friends, family, and their mentors. Epperlein writes that the young black men in America have been turned into an international symbol of violence. In the film, the men express frustration at the low expectations and social structures that are set up to prevent them from going beyond the roles of musician, athlete, or lawbreaker. So what does it mean to be young, black, and male in today's society? And how are black men stepping outside of invisibility and claiming their success on their own terms? Today, we're joined by Karina Epperlein, an independent filmmaker and director, writer, and producer of Finding the Gold Within. The film is being shown at the Mill Valley Film Festival on October 12th at 4:15 at the San Rafael Theater. It also screens on November 4th at 7 p.m. at the New Parkway Theater in Oakland, and Karina will be at that screening for a Q&A, and she joins us in studio. Hi, Karina. Welcome to the show. Thanks for coming in.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
And we're also joined by three of the young men in the film. Stacey Starr is a communications major at Kent State University and student advisor for EPIC. That's a student organization that promotes expression through artistic creativity. Hi, Stacey. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Great to have you. Brandon Costa is a political science major at the University of Akron. He works as a student ambassador and research assistant. He wants to pursue a PhD and find a job in government relations and consulting. Hi, Brandon. Thank you for coming in.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for having us.
And Darius Simpson is a political science major at Eastern Michigan University and president of the Poetry Society. Hi, Darius. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Great to see you. I feel like I know you guys because you spoke so honestly in this amazing film. So, Karina, how did you first run across the Alchemy mentoring program in Akron, Ohio? How did you first learn about it?
I actually met Dr. Kwame Scruggs on a conference where lots of very interesting community organizations were introducing their work. And I was struck, but I wasn't going to make a film. I always hold myself back. There's so many great courses we could take as documentary filmmakers. But it's a long journey. It's a difficult task to find the money. But when Kwame sent me a couple of stills that were next to each other or above each other about young boys, about 11 years old, and then when they are ready to graduate from school, two group photos, I was struck. I suddenly was drawn in. I saw a journey there, and their faces were glowing and beaming, and I was just some kind of transmission that started to call me in, and I started getting curious, and I said, maybe there's something here about them graduating and following them into college. Hmm. So that's how I started. Then Kwame, we opened it up. We found a little seed money, and then it became way more than I thought it would become because I was so blown away.
In what way?
By the work that Alchemy does, extremely unusual work, very unique, and the depth that initiates in everybody who's in the circle, actually. It's irresistible. And I felt, well, that's just for me. I like things that go really deep, that work with the soul and the spirit. And I know that field really well. I can move with that. I probably by now can translate that well into a cinematic language. And it will be a wonderful challenge. So, yeah.
What I loved about Alchemy as a journalist is a lot of it is based on storytelling.
Exactly.
And you talk about Kwame, and he's such an amazing storyteller. And he says it's simple, but it's true. Stories really heal.
Yeah, exactly. So these stories are mythological stories from all over the world. They could be from Africa, from Japan, Asia, I mean, any part really of the world, Europe, Grimm's fairy tale. And then as they're told in the circle, there's a circle, there's first drumming, then the story is told to the African beat of a drum by Kwame Williams. And, you know, Kwame Scruggs and Kwame Williams are co-facilitators. And then they stop in the middle and ask basically what resonated with you, and they write down in the journal. Then the journey goes on, next question, and now they start maybe sharing something. So there's an exploration and a journey that happens in these circles, and it kind of spirals deeper and deeper.
And just to let listeners know, it's a very intimate space, and all of the men are in a circle.
Yes.
And then the drums are in front of them.
Right. That basically gives the heartbeat.
Right.
Yeah. That sets it right away, the space. Yes, the intimate space, that there's individuality within that circle. Everybody sits by age. And it's a strong visual and palpable thing that arises then. And, you know, for me, it was a question, how am I going to film this? So we get that intimacy. So I insisted with my cameraman and myself, I did camera too, to be inside the circle. And we needed trust for that, and we needed really good people to do that kind of filming, you know, inside the circle. And for the young men, this core group of 28 young men, to allow us in there. And that, again, all the trust and all what happened had to do really also with alchemy and their kind of work, that what they're teaching and what they're embodying, the leaders do embody that, and what they're igniting in the young man is the deep passion. So at that moment, a young person can start seeing, is Karina somebody that's legitimate?
Yeah.
And I mean on a deep level, or not, you know? And so
right.
That really happened, that chemistry.
I was wondering about that, how you gained trust from the group, because you were in there on a regular basis and you filmed them in very intimate moments, sharing a lot of stories, crying, anger, really revealing a lot of things about themselves.
Yeah. You know, that's the thing. I think we can only capture really well what we know inside of ourselves. If we know pain deeply and have worked with it ourselves, then we can capture it. And I believe that as a human being, we can listen well, we can be witness and just receive. And whether that's anger, pain, sorrow, all of those things. So that's for me, it felt I needed everything from what had led me up to this point in my life. I needed to apply that.
And that is Karina Epperline. She is the filmmaker behind the documentary Finding the Gold Within, which follows six black men into their first years of college and their involvement with the program Alchemy, which uses mythology, drumming, and writing to deal with everything from racism, stereotypes, and other challenges. So why don't you all talk about how you were first introduced to alchemy? At what age did you join? And how old are you now? And what really drew you in? Stacey, why don't you start off?
Okay. Well, I was introduced to alchemy as an after-school program in middle school. I started in sixth grade around 11, 12 years old. And for the record, I'm now 21. And I've been fully involved, committed, and determined to really stay involved with alchemy in the future throughout these past 10 years. And it was basically an after-school program introduced to me.
What was it about the program that got you to stay for 10 years?
When I first started, middle school was sort of a very developmental period in a young man's life, and I was sort of figuring out, you know, who I want to be in the future. And alchemy provided positive male role models through the co-facilitators, Kwame Williams and Kwame Scruggs, as well as the other elders that he brought into the group. And the storytelling and the sharing really helped me feel that I was able to relate with a lot of the other peers out there. You know, we shared a lot of intimate, personal things about our own lives. You know, a lot of things we wouldn't share in public, a lot of things that I wouldn't share personally. So, you know, so to know that other people out there felt what I felt was really comforting. Yeah.
And the really interesting thing also is that you all come from very different backgrounds, yet you all have very similar experiences.
Yes. Yes.
And we'll talk about that in depth later. What about you, Brandon?
Well, I joined Alchemy in my sophomore year of high school, I would say when I was 16, and I'm now currently a senior of political science at the University of Akron. But what drew me into Alchemy was, for the first time, it was really an invitation to a space that was removed from the danger of the typical environments that we're in. And it was also the first time that I'd really been told that I was worth something. The group fosters their young men with this sense of love and this sense of pride in which it introduces them to something that is really foreign.
Can you elaborate on that when you say it was the first time you were told that you were worth something?
Well, one of the common themes in the film and in alchemy is highlighting and accentuating this gold, this concept of this gold that is truly trapped within everyone within society, but in particular the black males in society, because so often we're told as black males that we really aren't much, mm-hmm. and that society doesn't expect much out of us. So when we came to the circle, we were constantly being met and greeted with this notion and this fact that we were absolutely everything that we could want to be, and that we were nothing but gold deep down.
Because alchemy is about entering the darkness to find the hidden gold. And that's the sort of the gist of the program. Mm-hmm. What about you, Darius? When did you first learn about the program?
So I found out about the program through we received letters during class my freshman year in high school. Now it was branching out to my school. It originally started in a school about 30 minutes away from my school. But we got letters from our guidance counselor saying, you know, come into this room at this time. And, you know, I got the letter. It was a little eerie. I walked in. And, you know, I was a class clown in high school, so I walked in and saw my other class clown friends. I'm like, oh, shoot, they got us. We're in trouble. This is detention or intervention or something like that. But, you know, we sat down and we got into the myth, and I saw it was nothing like I thought it was. And it was great. What drew me in and what kept me around is the myth and the metaphor and the correlation to real life, because being a poet and having poetry be my life, it was very interesting to not only reflect on my own life and hear how the myth related to me, but to hear how the same story could resonate 16 different ways between five people. So,
Well, and also, did you find that before getting involved with alchemy, was there any opportunity for all of you to talk about these issues? What does it mean to be a black man? Where do these stereotypes come from? Why does society place such low expectations on us?
Well, prior to the program, I was never exposed to that type of ideology. You know, I was never exposed to that type of reality. And, you know, as a young kid at that age, I don't think I was really looking to really try and understand that. I didn't really see the importance in it, being, you know, 11, 12 years old. But over the course of the next, like, 5, 6 years, it really broadened my whole curiosity towards the subject.
I would say in independent circles, we had opportunities prior to joining the group to talk about these issues, but never in the capacity in which we had to, and never with the ability to kind of come and address the wounds that we were all dealing with.
My story is a little different. I've been talking about this my entire life because of how my mother was. So, like, in second grade, when the unit introduced, the first time I heard about black people in history was slavery. Mm. And so, you know, you introduce slavery in second grade to a bunch of elementary school kids. So at recess, they chased me into the woods, calling me a slave. So my mother had to come up to the school, and it was a big fiasco. And just time after time after time, and again, there were things within the school from teachers, from peers that I've been dealing with. So I've talked about it and with my family and with peers, but like they said, never in a way to address a wound that is real for all of us and talk about healing.
Karina, what was it like for you to hear these stories that came out? I mean, everything from overt hardcore racism to very subtle racism. Mm-hmm. I mean, using the N-word in the poetry class as a joke. I mean, there was a scene in which Darius was around at a table with about four white guys, and they just used the N-word as it was a joke and just sort of laughed. Mm-hmm. And you're sitting there, Darius, thinking, oh, no, not again. Should I respond this time? Should I just go lift weights? I mean, what was it like for you, Karina, to hear this story over and over again from all of these guys?
Well, I sort of, you know, and this is what had prepared me for the film. I really did want to bust the stereotypes about young black men because I knew about that. And so I was just carefully listening. I was never wanted to impose, really, in my documentary filmmaking. I wait to see what arises from the subjects, what's their most important themes. And that just came up different things with each of them. But the theme was throughout this. So when Darius started telling me stories right away when I came to the campus, And he had told me actually about these guys before who were in the classroom. So I'm setting him in a place where the light comes good on him. And it happens that these very same guys, he tells me the day before in the interview about them, sit there. We have two cameras in the room. The teacher has allowed us to come. So it's a big deal. Everybody knows. And that they're acting up like this, I was like, that I was baffled. Yeah. And that the teacher wouldn't know it because he's in the back of the room. There's no way to now bring this out for Darius. He has to deal with it by himself somehow. And even my suspicion was that even if somebody would bring this out in the open, the teachers are not trained, the professors are not trained to facilitate an honest discussion there.
Well, and in one scene, it was involving another boy, or another young man, excuse me, in the film, whose friend said his biology teacher said, oh, you don't act black, because he's articulate, he's intelligent. I mean, so you've got it coming from the students and the teachers. But Karina, as a white woman, did you understand before entering this experience how pervasive this kind of racism is?
Yes, I did. it has partially to do that I was born in Germany. I raised there. I came 33 years ago to this country. By then I was 27. And so I was open enough to see with the eyes of an outsider immediately what is strange. This was the first thing that I kind of noticed. There is something, there is a surface of everybody is free, and then there's really an oppressed population there. And it really rang for me in a lot of subtleties. And I must say, maybe that's really my roots that are, you know, come and born after the war. My generation, many of us really investigated deeply what's wrong in the culture and what needs to be changed there. Like fascism and racism is the heritage. As a being German, that's a horrible heritage. That's a perpetrator nation, right? Mm. But to go through that darkness of investigating that, you become very sensitive to injustices all over the world. Now, since I do love America, which is the country of possibilities, I though felt like I also know how to talk about the dark sides, and maybe I can contribute to this discussion. A national discussion is still so needed, so much healing needed, so much shining light on those old, old, old wounds. And voices need to still come to the forefront to have a space to honestly express themselves.
And that is Karina Epperlein. She is the filmmaker of Finding the Gold Within. It focuses on the story of six young black men from Akron, Ohio, making the transition from high school to college as they participate in Alchemy, a mentoring program that teaches them confidence and self-respect through mythology, drumming, and writing. And the film screens at the Mill Valley Film Festival on October 12th at 4:15 at the San Rafael Theater, and then again on November 4th at 7 p.m. at the New Parkway Theater in Oakland. And you can find more information at yourcallradio.org. You can also watch the trailer there. Today we're joined by three of the young men featured in the film. Stacy Starr is a communications major at Kent State University. Brandon Costa is a political science major at the University of Akron. And Darius Simpson is a political science major at Eastern Michigan University and president of the Poetry Society. And if you'd like to join us, if you're part of a program that works with young black men, if any of these stories resonate with you, we'd love to hear from you. And then the other question that we're exploring the whole hour, what does it mean to be young black male and dare to step out of invisibility? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. Stacy, in the film, you tell a really interesting story about working in an international office.
International Affairs Office.
Yeah, yeah. And how you're learning about how what the United States does affects other countries. Mm-hmm. You talk about, you know, just wanting to see the world, wanting to see how people in other parts of the world live. And you have really interesting stories about how people in other parts of the world perceive black men. Can you tell us about a few of those?
Well, one of the stories that's actually mentioned in the film is a story about a Saudi Arabian student. He has showed up, you know, and we have programs set up at Kent State to sort of help the international students get used to talking, just speaking with people in English, having a normal conversation. So we have this thing called a conversation partner, where we pair an international student with an American student or someone who's fluent in English, and they just pretty much talk for about an hour every few days just to sort of pick up their conversation skills. And one of the students came in, and he voiced the fact that he wanted a conversation partner, but he also voiced that one stipulation was that he could not be a black man. And I heard it. I worked reception at this office. This is my freshman year, so I just really gotten involved. You know, I've just started getting exposure to these things, so I was sort of drawn back. One of my coworkers actually asked him why, and he proceeded to say that we made him nervous, that he was scared of us, that he thought that one of us may hurt him. He said he couldn't understand how we spoke. He couldn't understand how the way we our dialect, pretty much like the way we pretty much converse with other people and things like that. It was really it really pulled me back because I never heard anyone here or anyone blatantly say these things. You know what I mean? Blatantly just say, you know, I don't want that because of this, and I believe that this is really how it is. You know, because you know it was just something that really opened my eyes to the way that people really see us. And I mean, I worked with a lot of. A lot of Asian students, a lot of Middle Eastern students, and we all sort of exchange our stories about stereotypes, you know. And I was really able to see America from their eyes, as well as seeing their own country from their eyes as well. So it was definitely really interesting. I had a Saudi Arabian friend who talked about the way he was treated here, you know, where people would shout just outrageous things to him simply because of the way he looked. And his accent, the way he spoke, you know. So it was after things that transpired throughout 2001, you know, and everything dealing with, like, just Asian and general stereotypes, you know, you can't really escape those things.
Mm. Were you able to have a conversation with that guy?
I did not speak
no.
with him.
No, okay.
I didn't, no.
So how do you deal with that?
How do you deal with it? You have to stay aware. I honestly feel like some people come from a background where their hands are tied on their perspective of a certain issue. You know, coming from from an entirely different country, they have a certain media flow where they don't really dictate what comes through and what doesn't. And if only certain things are getting through, that's not necessarily their problem. It's more about the media. It's more about what they're letting people see, you know.
How do you guys deal with it? Darius?
Me personally, I enjoy making people uncomfortable. I actually have these shirts made. It's a cause for the black male genocide going on. It's black man down. There's an image. And then it says, what you gonna do? On the back, it says, be king, be Kevlar, be beautiful, be bulletproof. And we were getting off the train yesterday, and a white woman asked what the shirt meant. And, you know, I told her, I explained that the black man down is for black male genocide. What you're going to do is a challenge to get active in your communities in the world. And that the back, the be king, be Kevlar, be bulletproof, be beautiful, is explaining the double consciousness a black man walks in this world and being punished for being too weak and too strong and having to dance in between there. And she was speechless. And it was, I had to walk away. I didn't know what to say, but I enjoy making people uncomfortable and bringing it to your face. And it was a process to get here. Like before you saw in the film, you shut down and you internalize it and you, and you hold it
right.
And you don't know what to do. But now it's okay. Every chance I get, I make people uncomfortable with the fact that there's racism, there's a genocide, there's this and that going on.
Well, and it's taken years for you to get to this point because in the film, I could tell that you were just not, you did not know how to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
I did,
do you take action? Do you keep it within? We're going to go to break, but I'd love to continue with that after the break. That's Darius Simpson. He goes to Eastern Michigan University. Stacey Starr goes to Kent State University. And Brandon Costa goes to the University of Akron. And they're all featured in the new documentary, Finding the Gold Within, which features six young black men making the transition from high school to college. And we'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on KALW, a program that relies on engaged listeners. We invite you to join today's conversation by calling toll-free 866-798-TALK, 866-798-8255, or you can send your question or comment to feedback@yourcallradio.org. Coming up at 11 from the BBC, it's World Have Your Say. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we'll have a conversation with UC Berkeley biologist Anthony Barnosky about his new book, Dodging Extinction: Power, Food, Money, and the Future of Life on Earth. He writes that unless we rethink how we run our global ecosystem, where we get our food, and how we make our money, we will trigger the sixth great extinction. So what can we do to halt this looming crisis? That is tomorrow. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. And if you'd like to join us today, we're talking about the new documentary, Finding the Gold Within, which is making its world premiere at the Mill Valley Film Festival. You can see it October 12th at 4:15 at the San Rafael Theater, and then on November 4th at 7 p.m. at the New Parkway Theater in Oakland. And the film focuses on a mentoring program in Akron, Ohio, called Alchemy. It teaches young Black men how to deal with racism, stereotypes, and other challenges through mythology, drumming, and writing. And today we are joined by Karina Epperline. She's the filmmaker behind Finding the Gold Within. She followed these young men for 3.5 years, and three of them are in studio. Stacy Starr is a communications major at Kent State University and student advisor for EPIC. That's a student organization that promotes expression through artistic creativity. Brandon Costa is a political science major at the University of Akron. He's a student ambassador and research assistant. And Darius Simpson is political science major at Eastern Michigan University and president of the Poetry Society. And if you'd like to join us, if you work with a program that focuses on confidence and working with young Black men, we'd love to hear from you. And also, you know, the larger question, what does it mean to be young, Black, and male in today's society? If you'd like to talk about stereotypes and how young Black men are defeating them, if you've had to deal with a lot of these stereotypes, how have you dealt with them? We'd love to hear your story. And if you have any questions for our panel today, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from a caller. Let's go to Robert in Richmond. Hi, Robert. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you, Rose. And I'll be brief and take the answer off the air, but I wanted to thank your participants because I used to work for a long time, I taught a school for adolescent who had been thrown out of high school, and I met a number of young men who basically had a great deal of anger and alienation inside them and didn't really know much what to do with it other than take it out on me and the other people who were trying to. So I have a lot of respect for what these people are doing. I just wanted to say, in the 80s out here in the Bay Area, and I think cross country, Michael Mead and Robert Bly did a lot of work with mostly white young men, of which who I was one. I think we were called Yuppies on Bums, I believe was the name of it. I wondered if the filmmaker, I gather Michael Mead makes an appearance in the film, so I guess she's aware of him, but I just wondered if that work, which I found to be helpful in kind of opening me up and also introducing me to the world of mythology, did that inform a lot of any of what you're doing? And definitely carry on. I wanted to also suggest to the fellow who has that shirt, I understand that and I respect that a lot. You know, if you carried a card with you that gave somebody something to do when they saw you or came up to you, like go to your website or something, I think that would be good for me. If I was to encounter that experience and then I was given a card that said, check this out, you know, it would give me something to do. But that's just my two cents, and please carry on. I think it's great.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, Michael Mead is in the film, and he's also introduced by Dr. Swami Scruggs as the grandfather of alchemy. And it's Alchemy, Inc., but we're shortening it to just alchemy. And that, therefore, these young men and the core group that he had introduced to them for several years already, and Michael Mead came as a visiting them and doing a storytelling circle with them. So he says, you are the grandchildren, therefore, of Michael. So working with mythology really brings brings you into deep self-reflection, seeing yourself and seeing yourself embedded in the world, in the stories of the world, in the web of the world. So you learn a perspective. And as Kwame says, he found that young men would really start talking honestly and authentically because the myth removed them just a little bit, and so here they could see. And this is a very profound thing. It's a subtle thing, but it's very profound. That these spaces are not often opened to us. And one little thing before I let all of them explain this, how it felt to them, is that Michael Mead actually has worked in the recent years with a lot of disadvantaged youth, not just white, in L.A., with inner-city youth, with black. He's done incredible work. I just have to say that to his credit, because he's been in the trenches, just like the Alchemy Elders have been in the trenches.
Would any of you like to jump in to talk about how the mythology really has affected you?
She made a note noting on self-reflection. That's definitely played a really big part in my growth as a person, as an individual, for the course of the past 5 to 6 years. Being able to really be honest with yourself and be honest with yourself in the context of the world, being completely aware of what's around you, knowing where you stand at any given moment, gives you the best possible chance to really make the right step towards the right direction, actually knowing where you're going, you know. I definitely think that's a really big really big part of the mythology to me. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for calling, and I appreciate the caller's call. In alchemy, we're all exposed, actually, to Michael Mead's work, especially Men in the Water of Life. And one of the common themes that we actually refer to, actually, is that the water of life that Mead, that he recognizes, is something that has the ability really to heal universally. As humans in the society, you know, we're all walking around and carrying these wounds in which we've picked up through our human experiences. And whether that's been through discrimination, prejudice, death, or any of the ill experiences that we've encountered, the water of the life in which can be gained and found through the self-reflection and self-reflective processes of the use of myth can really heal some of the things that we're going through. We like to say that he who ails his sickness cannot be healed, but only go through life hurting others.
For me, the myth specifically has played a role in how I see the world and how I can translate different messages to people as far as my poetry is concerned. Being able to hear in the myth how, and like I said, see how the same story and the same thing can reflect 16 different ways among 5 people allowed me to see a way I can make a radio show relate to a blue whale and present a message that's fluent and it makes sense. So with me, it's really had an effect on my poetry and the way I write.
And in the film, he does say, I can make a connection between a skyscraper and a lemon.
Yeah.
I just always love that part.
That one struck me too. You know, the other thing that was interesting when Robert said, Darius, in addition to wearing your T-shirt, you should have a card with maybe a website on it. You know, the first thing I thought of was, oh, yeah, I'd love to ask you all, what would you like society to do? But at the same time, I'm thinking, but in addition to all these struggles you're dealing with, your own, you know, personal issues, is it fair for us to say it's your responsibility to teach people about these things? What are your thoughts on that? Because that's a lot to put on you.
I think the reality that we live in makes it our responsibility.
Yeah.
And that's the reality. We can't really talk about the is-of fallacy and say what it should be like, because the reality is it is our responsibility. And there are people who look like us even who don't have the luxury of not knowing and not being aware, but somehow still take that luxury. So it is our responsibility to make people aware that look like us and those that don't look like us. And it's our responsibility more so to actually do something about it, because we can sit and talk on radio shows or on media or in private rooms all day. But at the end of the day, nothing's going to change until we go out in the world and start talking to people and start, you know, get organized and have different movements going on. So definitely it's our responsibility.
Yeah, I definitely second that. I feel like, I definitely feel it. Once you really realize where you are and where you stand as a black male in America, another boatload of things comes along with that response, with that real epiphany, you know, realizing that it is your job, you know what I mean? It's your job to make a difference. It's your job to change the way that you live, you know what I mean? And I definitely feel like that it's our job to really make sure that not only to educate people, you know, because you can know all day and not say anything, but the fact is you have to address it and really see it carry on throughout your life.
And you see how they're not talking over each other? Listening, they really know how to listen. And that I would suggest to anybody who's listening out there, to open their hearts and their minds and listen very carefully and question their own stereotypes. Mm. When people see the film, the honest people have come to me and said, you know what this brought up for me is my secret stereotypes. In the back of my head are still all these images, but in your film, I don't see those images. So it really, it just rattles me a little bit. So I think that's also...
And what has it been like for you all? Because you're here in the Bay Area for the world premiere of The Gold Within. And I want to give you a huge thanks for coming in today, because I understand you've been doing 6 days of premieres and Q&As. So you're probably very tired. But what has it been like for you all to, you know, you're sharing your story, very personal, intimate stories with the world. And then you're answering questions and hearing from people about their own stereotypes. What's it been like, Darius?
For me, it's been... Of course, an extreme blessing and wonderful and all of that. It's been tiring, but a good tired. You know, glad that we're actually doing something and making changes in people's lives. There's been very different experiences, because the first day was with some younger people from middle school to high school.
300 of them. Oh, wow. 300. Yeah. Big theater.
Then the same day, we had a different... Or the next day, we had a different crowd.
That same evening.
Same day, okay. It's all run together, clearly. It's been a long time. Same day, we had an older crowd, an adult crowd. And just seeing the responses and the disparity between how they felt about the film and the questions they had for us, it seemed like the younger people were a lot less inhibited. They were just genuinely interested and curious and wondering. They didn't feel uncomfortable about saying, so you're black, how is that? And it was beautiful for the response like that to come out. But understandable how, you know, being an adult and being a professional, you want to carry yourself a little differently. But it's been, I have no words except interesting, inspiring, and motivating.
Yeah. Beyond the week, the whole experience in itself has truly been a blessing. We realized going into the project that we were really so fortunate that Karina had seen something within us that made her want to share our stories with the world. There's so many other beautiful men that are in the Alchemy program that she could have selected. And so while we're out here, we've really kind of been overwhelmed just with all the attention that has been being paid to our presence. We realize that we're involved with something that's much bigger than us, and that we're being seen is essentially an avenue to facilitate some crucial discussions that really need to happen within the American society. So I'd say we've had moments of being starstruck to a certain extent, but we understand that, you know, this film and this project in itself is really not about us, but really just the conversations and discussions that hopefully will come about because of us.
Stacey? Yeah, it's definitely a blessing. Just the fact that I'm out here and I'm out of Ohio during the school year alone, you know, being able to miss out on that weather, you know, I'm not complaining whatsoever. But yeah, it's definitely been a definite experience. Coming out here, people walking up and already knowing my name alone, you know, that right there is even to put me back on my heels. But yeah, it's being out there for the Q&A, the great questions. I love to see the way that that this film is really probing the issues that people like to ignore, you know, the people that they like to leave that out of the conversation, you know. And the fact that that is the only thing we're talking about is really made this whole experience worthwhile, really.
Brandon?
There's really been a lot of humanizing moments this past week. There's been a lot of moments in which our stories have really resonated with people, and they've been able to come up to us and openly just pour out their secrets and their insecurities. And it's been a moment that's really made us all step back and say, wow, we all are really in this human experience together, and regardless of the obstacles that all of us individually face from specific demographics, you know, there's still opportunity and hope and chances that we can come together collectively and discuss some of these things.
Brandon Costa, Darius Simpson, and Stacey Starr are featured in the documentary Finding the Gold Within. And the film focuses on the story of six young black men from Akron, Ohio, making the transition from high school to college as they participate in Alchemy, a mentoring program that teaches them confidence and self-respect through mythology, drumming, and writing. And the young men talk about everything from racism, stereotypes, male role models, and other challenges they face. The Finding the Gold Within makes its world debut premiere at the Mill Valley Film Festival, and you can see it October 12th at 4:15 at the San Rafael Theater, and again November 4th at 7 p.m. at the New Parkway Theater in Oakland. And Karina Epperlein, the filmmaker, will be at the November 4th screening for a Q&A. Karina spent 3.5 years with these men, and you can watch the trailer at yourcallradio.org. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. We've done a lot of shows about these issues. What happened in Ferguson, the killing of Michael Brown, we did a show after that. Trayvon Martin, Oscar Grant. We talk about the conversations that come out of these tragedies and how we can go deeper. Yeah. So where do you think we are right now with this conversation about race in this country? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. And if you have a story to share about what it means to be black and male in our society, if you work with young black men, if you have any questions for our panel, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. You all talked about the fact that being in the Bay Area and going to these screenings brings up very real conversations and real questions. So where do you think we are right now as we are having conversations in this society about Michael Brown, about things you guys brought up in the film, how you take your hood off, right? How you put your hands in your pocket when you walk down the street. I mean, we're hearing a lot of men talk about this in the national media. So what do you think about the conversation we're having now? Does it seem real to you, Darius?
It's happening. But it's still not real, because in the mainstream, when you see these conversations happening, they're usually put on, you know, CNN or, you know, a news station where you have that person expressing that. But right next to them, you have 2 to 3 other people of European descent that disagree and break down why race is not an issue. So while the voices are being pacified, they're not being truly heard. And even in conversations on a regular, you have a fear of talking about race. Like when at my school specifically, we met as soon as Michael Brown was killed, we had a meeting, and it was very clear we were meeting because Michael Brown was killed and we wanted to do something about that. One of the second things that was said was, this is not about race. And I was blown at that point. And I then realized, and this was from a black person, and it's deeper than race, it's deeper than culture. There's a problem in this country with people being afraid to talk about race and address that, okay, black men are being killed at an alarming rate. Regardless of the fallacy of black-on-black crime, regardless of anything else, black men are being targeted specifically. Why? Simple as that. If we break down the why, we would have so much more progress than we have today, than we have right now.
And it's been going on for so long. You know, I think it's erupting right now, and it's great. And I have actually, to my funders, I said, I don't know, I'm making this into a big film. It needs to be a big film. I just hope that we bring it out into the world at the right time so the country can pick it up and is not so afraid of talking about this.
I definitely feel like people are talking about it. People I've heard, you know what I mean? It's in the news, you know. There are conversations being had across the country. But the thing is that people aren't taking it seriously. They're seeing it as a perspective issue, you know, someone looking at it a certain way. But it is what it is. And you can only ignore the facts for so long. And I feel like the time clock is running out. I feel like sooner or later something is going to happen, because people need change and people want it badly enough to make something happen or to cause something to happen, you know what I mean, by their own hands. So I'm definitely feeling like there has been a sense of progress. There have been steps taken, but the thing is that we haven't accomplished anything yet.
And it's the time is now. Like, there's a, unfortunately, black males and black male genocide is hot right now, but it's also a fortunate thing, because we have this time where it's prevalent. We're a topic issue, so that brings us the opportunity to bring up some of the things that are real for us and to make some real change. But the problem is there are black males who don't understand the problem, who don't know that they are targeted. So the first step is to wake them up, then waking up the entire culture and waking up the entire country, then coming together and saying, okay, what are we going to do to change it? But the time is now. And he's, like you said, it's a very short period, because it pretty soon something else is going to happen.
Yeah.
The world will turn their face away from black males onto whatever's next.
People are going to get tired of not being heard and action not being taken.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's the point that I really don't want to see this come to. You know what I mean? It's never something good to see something like that happen. But when no change is being issued anywhere else, you know, you only have so many options.
Well, we've got a number of callers on the line, so let's hear from Rodessa Jones in San Francisco. And just to let you all know, Rodessa Jones has been on the show. She's an amazing artist in San Francisco, and she works with incarcerated women who present plays actually on stage.
Really?
So they go, they get out of jail,
and
they perform on stage and tell people about their experiences. I just had to tell them that, Rodessa, because I think they find it really interesting. Thanks for calling
definitely.
In.
I am so moved by this program. Great show. Blessings all around.
Thank you.
I listen, I am a sister of eight brothers.
Hmm.
And I grew up in a house where the men were always disappearing or dying much too early. And I sat amongst women wailing. So as I listen to you talk, I hope that inside of this experience, it did come up, our relationships as men and women together, because it so shapes us. You know, one young man talked about his mother when he was very young, and his mother just took it up and said, wait a minute, you know, you are more than a slave, basically. And I'm just hoping that as you move forward, that there are dialogues that happen between men and women, because when I saw the film The Boys in the Hood, I thought, this is a great film, but what about us?
Mm-hmm.
What about the girls in the hood?
Yeah.
And my work has been about getting women to step forward and take the responsibility for their own inability to either communicate or want too much or expect too much from men who, as you are describing, are at risk constantly. But I just wanted to make the comment that we're all at risk far as a cultural group. And I thank you all for what you've given, and I'm looking forward to seeing this film. And so I just wanted to make that comment. Blessings to everybody.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, what about the mothers, right?
Yeah,
the great
yeah.
sorrow. There's a great sorrow in this country, and that needs to be seen, too. Before we even maybe step on, we need to have maybe a day of commemoration. I was shocked there is no memorial plate at the Fruitvale station. When we go there, I'm just like, I'm literally in a state of shock. Mm-hmm. I come from a country where we have made these, there has been genocide, and there were these memorial commemorations happening, still happening 50 years later, every day happening. So, yeah.
Just to speak on what she just spoke on, definitely it's all true. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's a unified step forward. So as we progress ourselves, it's essentially leading off into the women and our relationships with women. And as we progress and as we get better, so will the women around us. And it's a call to action for the males, because specifically I'm a male and I know that experience. I know how to address men that look like me. And as the hope and the goal is that as we move forward, we call a higher standard for the entire culture rather than just black males. So definitely.
All right. Well, thank you again for calling in, Rodessa. Let's go next to Ruby in Mill Valley. Hi, Ruby.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for this show, Rose. It's just beautiful. I wanted to ask the young men, I grew up in the Midwest in Milwaukee, and my husband is from Ohio, so I've been to Akron.
Hmm.
And now I live in what I like to call Mildew Valley. People will understand why. I was in an integrated city more or less in Milwaukee, more or less. And in Akron, it's quite African-American.
Yeah.
And now, if you're at the festival, you're going to be in a lily-white world.
Yeah, yeah.
And I really, I hate to use the word hate, but I hate living in this whiteness. I would love to be in New York or somewhere where everybody mixes. Everyone's on public transportation. You get to engage with people who are not like yourself.
Mm-hmm.
My question to you is, in this lily white world that you are in, certainly today, do you always feel when you're in a situation with mostly white people that you have to be an emissary, that you always have to speak to your race rather than just be a person?
Well, Stacey. With me personally, I'm actually biracial. My mother is white, and my father is African American. And so when it comes to me sort of being in front of white people and I'm asking questions, if it's usually when they ask questions out here, as far as we've been out here, the questions I've gotten have been mostly directed towards race, simply because that they don't know the experience of being an African American male in this country. And I feel like if they want to know, I'm not going to hold back, because I feel like everyone should be aware of that experience. But I don't feel like I need to. I don't feel inclined to push towards race when I'm talking to a white person regarding anything involving the film or the program. I don't feel that need to push towards race. But if they're inquiring about it, I'm definitely going to give them as much information as I can.
And we've got about a minute left.
Well, I want to also say what I have observed, even through the making of this film, the years, there's a lot of white guilt and shame. Mm-hmm. And we have a quote in the film from Langston Hughes where he speaks about how beautiful, how beautiful I am.
And they will see I too am beautiful.
Yeah, and they will see that. Yeah. They will be ashamed. Mm-hmm. They will notice how beautiful. So it's a famous poem from Langston Hughes. And this is where the white population, and, you know, it doesn't matter whether you're lily white or not. Yeah. That's something very, very deep we all need to look at. Mm-hmm. Where's our hurdle here? If we cannot come down to the sorrow that's beneath that and then walk into action and walk into the future, then we're just stuck. You know? Mm-hmm.
So 20 with 20 seconds, yeah. I'll say there's a black male genocide outside in your backyard. Don't wait for this to happen in your community. Black men down. What you gonna do?
Darius Simpson, Brandon Costa, and Stacey Starr are featured in the documentary Finding the Gold Within. Follows the story of six young black men in Akron, Ohio, making the transition from high school to college. It's making its world premiere debut at the Mill Valley Film Festival October 12th at 4:15 at the San Rafael Theater. Screens again November 4th at 7 p.m. at the New Parkway Theater in Oakland. And Karina Epperline, the filmmaker, will be there for a Q&A. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. How can we prevent the next mass extinction? On the next Your Call, we'll have a conversation with UC Berkeley biologist Anthony Bernoski about his new book, Dodging Extinction: Power, Food, Money, and the Future of Life on Earth. He writes that unless we rethink how we run our global ecosystem, where we get our food, and how we make our money, we will trigger the sixth great extinction. So what can be done to halt this looming crisis? Join the conversation on the next Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Becca Hoekstra produces the show, Malihe Razazan is senior producer, and Matt Martin is the executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.